Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Match Ball.
Hello there, and welcome to the show. It's brought to you with Levi Solicitors. They will do you 10% off your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. And they might even do a little bit of injury workplace stuff if you've been kicked around, let's say, a field somewhere in Lancashire, because that wasn't very pretty today, was it? I'm Dan Moylan. With me is Michael Normanton.
Hello.
And so is Moscow White. Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
An industrial game, a rather industrial game that was hard to love. A game that only a mother could love, maybe, that one.
Can Ashley Barnes use them for injury to feeling? I believe he seemed very upset, didn't he, for the majority of that game. For the majority of his career, he seems to have been a bit cross about something.
But Burnley's whole modus operandi seems to be to boot the shit out of the opposition and then moan a lot when you go down. As you pointed this out in an article last year, wasn't it, Moscow? And then also to really whinge when you remotely touch them and roll around a lot.
Yeah, it was much better last year because we beat them 4-0. So that felt like the big advantage.
Do we take a point and just move on from it, or is this a crisis building?
Let's buy six players. That's what I say.
Sack Bielsa. That's the other thing. If you can't handle English football tactics, then I don't know what we're doing by keeping him in a job, apart from wasting our time.
We were kind of screwed over by COVID on this one as well, because we've had to make changes, which, as with every change, it means Stuart Dallas has to move, because that seems to be his role in the squad, doesn't it? That he has to be the person who shuffles about to make way for a new formation or a team change or anything like that. So, I mean, presumably they're going to be out for another week or two at least. So, we'll see.
Yeah, it's a bit sketchy, isn't it, when you've got such a thin squad. Have we done enough in the transfer market is going to be the question that ends up getting asked off the back of this week. What do you think? Have we done enough, or are we short?
We look a bit short. I mean, looking at the bench today, it was back to the kind of old way of having children on there, wasn't it? It was, you know, McCarron and Somerville and Gelhart and people who we've not actually seen before, whereas it felt a little bit like last year with people like Koch and Rodrigo coming in. We were maybe going to get to that stage where we had some more experienced old pros on there, which didn't quite happen.
Let's talk football. Or do we want to talk MMA? Would that make more sense? Because they elbowed us. My notes in the first half are elbow, push, karate kick, and Paddy Bamford discussed it as being like jujitsu. It said Tarkovsky tried to do jujitsu on him, which, by the way, I've pulled up the definition of jujitsu, and it's a family of martial arts and a system of close combat, unarmed or with a minor weapon that can be used in a defensive or offensive manner to kill or subdue one or more weaponless or armed and armoured opponents. Was it kill or subdue, do you think, there?
I think there were potentially two red cards in the first half for them. There was the one that Barnes did on Dallas, which was very reckless. He was fully in the air when he did it, that one. And then there was it me as well? Did one? I can't remember.
Hey? I will not let that joke lie, by the way, so be careful which defenders you talk about. Just stick to Tchaikovsky, because there's no jokes about the way he conducted himself. I know Tchaikovsky wasn't a conductor. That doesn't even work either. Anyway, you did what? To who?
I can't remember now. They were not very nice, were they? But I mean, I don't want to concentrate too much on how annoying Burnley were, because
of course we do. It was the story of the match.
But we didn't really cause many problems, did we?
How do you cause problems when, you know, they keep kicking you so hard?
That is true. It suited them, did the game. I noticed we kind of started all right then. I think I made a note that between 18 and 28 minutes, there was basically no football played. That was the bit when Llorente and Wood were involved, like tussling with each other on a corner, and then it just felt like there was 10 minutes of the referee stopping the game and waiting for free kicks, and that did suit Burnley. I'm sure that's the game they want to get into. And I think it was telling as well that when we equalised, they didn't divert from the time wasting whatsoever. They just were like, well, okay, we'll stick with this. A point is something we're happy with. So, whereas you got the impression we were definitely trying to push for the win at the end.
What do you make of the referee? How did he referee that? Do you think it was too light touch, too heavy touch, somewhere in between? It felt like he had a very broad definition of what a yellow card was.
I thought he probably did just about all right. If he maybe let them get away with a touch too much, I would say. I mean, it's annoying. It's a different season, and they have said they're going to do things differently this season in terms of the levels of contact and stuff that they're going to allow. But it feels like people were getting sent off for some of those things last year, like when people are completely out of control and in the air. I think Barnes maybe got away with it slightly because Dallas landed on top of him, which looked a bit sore. But I mean, that doesn't mean he's allowed to kick him in the first place.
I mean, you don't want, it's funny, isn't it? You don't want to see those tackles going in the first place. But you also don't want to see red cards for tackles going in. It's just trying to find that balance, isn't it? Would you have sent him off for that?
I mean, I would, yes. But I'm also aware that I'm not a very neutral man.
Yeah, I don't think it's even about whether something would have been a red card last season. It's about if you're flying through somebody after... it was offside, wasn't it? So the ball had basically gone dead. The referee's blown his whistle and you're still with both feet off the ground flying through an opponent. That's not something that's kind of, oh, we're letting a few things go this season. We're being a little bit more relaxed. We want it to be a bit more physical and allow a bit more contact. There's a difference. And I think Ashley Barnes was the wrong side of that difference. And I would have happily seen him sent off for it because I don't like him.
He is a complete bell end, it must be said. Like the amount of physical stuff he feels he should be able to get away with versus the amount of physical stuff that he feels should be allowed to happen to him. There is such a wide gulf between those. Because I feel like in the old days, you kind of get a traditional centre forward who will give as good as he gets. And Barnes is part Cristiano Ronaldo and part Lee Chapman in that respect. Like he's quite happy to chuck elbows around and stuff, but woe betide anyone who goes near him. And he's like, he becomes such a tearful man if he feels like he's been mistreated.
But then we saw Dyche at it as well. You know, when Calvin did that one in the first half, the one I think he got away with on, I'm just having a look, it was 17 minutes or thereabouts, where he stood on his foot and he went over and apologised eventually.
I thought he got booked for that one.
Did he? He got booked. Oh, was it that one? I thought it was the second one that he got booked for.
Did he get booked for that? What was his second one? I don't know.
He got away with that one, but then it was the nothing tackle that was very similar, I think, where he caught him on the ankle later on. But
that's right.
I was just going to say, because you saw on the replays of that, the super slow-mo, Dyche up in arms off the bench, complaining about what was it's one of those things that just happens.
It's the Dyche way. Burnley want it both ways. They want to be able to kick you, but they don't want anything to happen to them. I suppose that's true of every team, but most teams don't set out to make it that physical. And I think that's one of the things that makes it so annoying is if you can have a good physical battle with both teams kind of putting in hard challenges and enjoying it. Bamford was saying in his post-match that he quite enjoys a fight. He said in the least convincing manner possible. I don't know if Yerimina and Tarkowski want to sort of double up on him and see if he likes it then. But yeah, if everybody's up for it, then it's fine. But Burnley will try and make it a fight and then whinge about it being a fight. And it's that attempt to have it both ways that makes them kind of uniquely annoying amongst teams of that ilk.
Is that how you'd describe them then, as annoying? It was annoying, wasn't it? A bit of a frustrating game. But I'm like you, actually, Michael, just to go back to something you said. I don't like us with three at the back. We're never as effective ever when we play that formation.
I think I'd be more annoyed about Burnley had we won, weirdly. But as it is, I feel a little bit sad and worried. So
about Burnley, the town?
Well, I mean, that's been a long... the Burnley fans, actually, when we saw glimpses of them towards the end, Sky trying desperately to pick out...
It's a family club in the sense that one family from Burnley populated the entire stadium, etc. Tight gene pool.
Yes, there's definitely an argument for people leaving Burnley, I think, after the crowd shots. Yeah, I don't know. I just feel a bit worried about a number of things now. And my...
What are you worried about?
Relegation. Relegation is more or less the be-all and end-all of my worries.
You can't skirt around the fact that we've got 2 points.
Yeah.
That's the naked truth here, isn't it?
2 points more than Arsenal. I mean, we're always relying on the being three teams worse than us in the league, and I think all of them are Arsenal at the moment, so that's helpful.
But I do share your concerns, Michael. Perhaps not as real and as vivid, but I just don't think we've done enough in the market. I think we have genuinely stood still, which is why I asked the question before, have we done enough in the market? I don't think we have. And we have demonstrably stood still. And we've got some good players in our team, but I don't think we've got enough match winners. Because I think, you know, Rodrigo, we're kind of stuck with him, whether we like it or not. He's got to produce it, or nobody does, doesn't he? I mean, we've got Rafa and we've got Jackie on the wings, but what I mean is somebody else around him. Because if he's not firing, and he seems to not fire more often than not, what do we do?
I do wonder if, I mean, presumably not, but I do wonder if someone rang up and asked about Rodrigo tomorrow, if we might think, yeah, we don't really have anywhere to play him. I mean, I suppose we do have somewhere to play him once Bamford is injured, which at some point he presumably will be. But until then, like I just don't want him playing in that position. He doesn't seem to know what he's doing. He seems to occasionally switch on when there's some attacking play and you can see him running forward and he'll do some good movement and things. But just generally speaking, when they have the ball and when we have the ball deeper, he's just a complete passenger. And I don't think we can afford to have him in the team playing that position.
He wasn't there for a scrap today, was he? I mean, that was a scrap. There's no two ways about it. And there's just those moments where he just doesn't have the physicality, does he? He just doesn't have the will to fight and put your leg in, whereas maybe Calvin Phillips, for example, does and will occasionally leave a foot in. But, you know, Burnley were going over the ball all the time and leaving feet in everywhere. And that's just not Rodrigo's game. And so there were the occasional glimpses of nice stuff when he got involved, but it was so rare, wasn't it? Because it wasn't the sort of game where we got anything going, really. Was it just a symptom of the game, or is he completely shot and we've wasted all that money?
Well, yeah, there's two ways you can look at what you're talking about. I mean, Bamford wasn't particularly involved because it wasn't a day when your forward players are being given space and time to do what they want as soon as they try to get the ball. I mean, what position does Ashley Barnes actually play?
Striker.
Right, and he's, you know, going two-footed through our left back in their penalty area. There's not an area of the pitch that Burnley leave free of a really bad tackle.
Mm.
And so Bamford's in a battle, Rodrigo's in a battle. I know Bamford ended up with his tapping from 2 yards, and he seems to enjoy going up against Tchaikovsky. I can never pronounce his actual name, so to call him Tchaikovsky, it's ignorant, and I apologise, but not to him because I don't like him. But you couldn't really say that he got the better of that physical battle either. I thought Harrison kept getting bullied off the ball by Loughton, was really struggling to get past him until the last 20 minutes or so when Shackleton came on and we started going at them more. So is it that Rodrigo can't do anything good ever, or is it that that's just a game that didn't suit him because there's no space or time for him to do anything? But then that really shouldn't have been the case against Crew when he didn't do a right lot either. So I don't know. I did admire when he took the pass. I think it was, might have been Luke Ayling. It could have been one of the other Leeds United players. Played a nice crossfield pass and he took it. Span, nice ball to put Jackie clear. That was good. It's there. It is possible. I don't know if it's what Bielsa seems to be hinting in his press conference this week, that he needs continuity and, you know, he cannot do anything more. He just needs to play more often. And he got, you know, he was one of our best players against Burnley last year when they tried to do exactly the same thing and sort of trying to account for the difference between a 4-0 win against Burnley at Turf Moor last year. Well, not even a year ago. We're talking a few months.
Yeah.
He came on as a striker in that game, though, didn't he? I think.
Yeah, Bamford went off. So
when the game was getting stretched as well, and there was nothing at stake.
I thought when Roberts came on, and I know Roberts is one of those, it feels like we have to have a discussion about whether Roberts is good every single week. But when he came on, he was just so much more involved. Like, he was actually dropping deep and making people move around the pitch. It feels like Rodrigo, he kind of sits behind Bamford and doesn't.
Well, did you know? Well, there was a point
particularly cause any problems
when I said to you two, like, what's Rodrigo doing back there? Because it seemed wrong because he was dropping really, really deep. And you said, trying to not get himself substituted.
He's trying to get involved. I think for some reason, Rodrigo does move around a lot, but he seems to move around off the ball and not get the ball. So he's creating space for others, I hope. But then when Tyler Roberts comes on, he moves around a lot and gets the ball and starts beating people and taking them on. And I would, you know, I'm defending them both equally, but I would drop Rodrigo and try Roberts there for the next game. But unless this idea that Because that was the other reason Bielsa gave for playing Harrison against Crewe was not, he demolished that idea that we had a, you know, we had a strong lineup because we want to win the Carabao Cup. He then went through the list of like who needs minutes, whose fitness is important, who needs this, is that. And then with Harrison, he said, and he's a player who benefits from being in the team every time, and he benefits from playing so often. If that's what's going to get the best out of Rodrigo, which we didn't really get last year, is a long period of time playing in that position until he gets the hang of it, then maybe we just have to suck it up until he gets the hang of it, and then he'll be 36 and retired.
I think that's the problem, is how long you wait, because there was that feeling of, well, he was always in and out last year, he had loads of injuries, maybe a full Bielsa pre-season, and he's going to come back strong. And what he actually did was come back with a really meek half a game at Old Trafford to then be dropped to then have another pretty pathetic injured 60 minutes.
Yeah, he was injured.
Oh, he was, wasn't he? Yeah.
Do you know what the truth of this is? He's a centre forward, isn't he? He's a number nine, and no matter how hard we try to make him into a midfielder, he's not a midfielder.
Drop Bamford then.
No, not going to do that. Let's talk about Patrick Bamford, because he's been given an England call-up and he scored his first goal today. In fact, should we deal with that? Because the goals were both equally scrappy and very befitting of the occasion. Do we want to talk about the two goals and the two number nines?
I want to see Roy Keane blaming Nick Pope for their goal the way he was blaming Melier for theirs.
Robbie Keane, it was, not Roy Keane.
It was Roy Keane first, although they have similar accents, but I'm sure it was Roy Keane was blaming Melier.
One of the Keane twins, anyway, was doing
one
it.
Of the Keane both, twins.
Both of them. Yeah, so there, let's do their goal first then. And Chris Wood scored and enjoyed it. Anyway, it seemed like he did.
Yeah, what happened to not celebrating against your former club? We were the making of him. He was nothing but a Leicester reject.
Poor form, wasn't it? Anyway, that goal, do you think it was coming when they scored?
Well, I said when we were watching it together, they will score from a corner, because it felt like they were getting fairly close every time. In fact, Pat Bamford, the nearest he had come to a goal before his actual goal was him heading against our post, wasn't it, from a corner. I mean,
and then as he broke, he was brutally assaulted on halfway, but carry on.
He was. I mean, they were trying to blame Melier for it. I mean, Melier also made an absolutely amazing save.
That fingertips onto the bar, yeah.
10 seconds before, but I don't know. I don't know enough about goalkeeping to necessarily judge him.
Whoa. Hang on a second. Hang on a second. Don't you start undermining your own credentials. Don't talk yourself
down. It's not my specialist area, is what I'm saying. I know.
You're a very, very good coach.
I know the basics about keeping out the net and stuff, and also kicking it up the pitch.
Yeah.
You've got to do that.
Kick it away from the net as opposed to in the net, yeah.
But it looked to me like they were sort of saying that he needed to react to it, but Chris Wood was stood in front of him, and if he'd have waited for that and Chris Wood hadn't touched it, the ball would have already gone in from the first shot.
It's split seconds, isn't it? And a keeper is trained to, you know, literally think on his feet and react to stuff as it happens and already be diving the right way when it's unleashed, because that's how you save stuff that's dead far over. Don't know if you've heard. I mean, you'll know that, Michael, obviously.
I know that, yeah.
So it's just one of those things, isn't it? You see the ball going one way, you've started to move, and then Chris Wood got his big toenail onto it and just did enough to divert it the other way, didn't he?
They were in a very subtle sort of way, they were bullying Melier all day. They kept just standing in front of him and things, in a way that didn't look like a foul, but actually was. And there was one of the ones where Ashley Barnes managed to hold his shirt as well, but he did it in a really sneaky way. He got really close to him and just sort of just held the right, like behind his armpits. So there was not any outstretched shirt or arm's length kind of holding his shirt. He's just like a very close little wrestling hold that he had him in. So they were doing stuff like that to him all day as well. But I thought he was fine, Melier, and I wouldn't blame him for that goal whatsoever.
No. When Wood read our exit, he is, 6 inches in front of him? And the idea, and what was being said by whichever of the Keens was, he's got to react. Like, if you're already going one way and the ball is diverted 6 inches in front of you, I don't know what kind of reactions either of this Keen thinks a person can have.
He did react, actually, because he stuck his leg on it. You know, he tried to get his leg just jutted out, didn't he? So he did whatever he could within reason, should we say.
It seems if it was absurd that he hadn't extended his entire body to match the width of the goal. But no, it was just... I mean, the bigger... If you want to blame somebody, how many players did we have in the penalty area who didn't clear it after he had saved or the crossbar had helped him? There was, you know, it felt like there were enough opportunities there. Two shots came in and we didn't get it clear before one of them's been diverted into the net. So there's enough other people around who could have done something about it rather than waiting for Melier to make a split second reaction stop.
Yeah. Last line defense his, stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, his physical capabilities. Yeah, we should have that of any human.
Long since clear before that. I agree. So it was quite hilarious when we equalised in a similar sort of fashion, really, wasn't it? When it pinged through a load of bodies off the foot of Jamie Shackleton and a brilliant number nine, England number nine finish from Paddy Bamford.
I mean, our goal did have a moment of beauty in it where Charlie Taylor was completely left on his arse by Rafinha. That was worth seeing.
I love that's my favourite part of the replays. My favourite parts are Charlie Taylor. Well, they're both Rafinha related. Is Rafinha doing a full Gary Cahill on Charlie Taylor, and then in the celebrations, trying to do a kung fu kick into Patrick Bamford's back, which was a curious way of celebrating a goal. But Rafinha is Rafinha.
What's the Brazilian martial art? Is it capoeira? It's called something like that.
That's a drink, isn't it?
Is it? Isn't that a form of dance slash
violence?
Maybe that's the thing is you never know with Rafinha whether he's dancing or executing a vicious martial art upon you. But he was good in both. And yeah, I'd been growing sort of frustrated with Bamford throughout the game because when we got good, I think the last sort of 20 minutes, 25 minutes with Roberts and Shackleton, who against Everton as well, impetus. Shackleton in particular, down the right, Rafinha seems to just fucking love him in ways that he doesn't like Luke Ayling, and releasing him into the box and they're exchanging the ball together. And is this the one that he came from a quick throw in, didn't it? Where Rafinha took the throw in dead quickly when Shackleton wanted to calm it down. Was that the missed chance? Anywho, they were having a great time together and we kept pinging the balls in, often from the other side, Harrison and Dallas. They started playing right in Burnley's corner flag. And we're putting all these boxes, all these low pullbacks and crosses into the 6-yard box. And at one point I asked if we could not sign Gary Lineker, because you just wanted that little bit of instinct of just get a toe on that or get in front of them.
Even north of 60 or whatever he is now.
Yeah, Bamford style. And it's a style thing, rather. It's one of those things where you end up being frustrated by a striker playing one way. You realise, well, no striker can play always. They can't do everything. So Bamford is good at the things he's good at. And you just wish he could just, because we put so many balls into that situation. If he could just elbow me, not me, if he could elbow me and get there first and just get a toe on it and it just flies into the front post before the keeper can move. Those kind of things never seem to be in him. He seems to want it, as it turned out to be. If you can just put it on his toe 2 yards from the goal, he'll put it in. Or you put it on his, like that Leicester goal last season when you put him through 20 yards from goal and he rattles it into the top corner. And that's why Burnley make it quite difficult for him to perform, because there's not the space in the box all the time that he seems to prefer to be able to score. So we were kind of making the chances that a Gary Lineker or somebody like that would have scored three of.
Do you think somebody more modern than Lineker might have been all right at that?
Well, I don't know.
Drogba or...
I don't know who does play like that really anymore. I may just be harking back to another dream. But
Eddie Nketiah was the name I mentioned while we were watching it.
But we do that a lot, and Bielsa talked about how cutting back from the byline it creates a lot of goals, but it's quite difficult to score. City do it all the time. Manchester City do it to specify which one. And it's always about, you're always looking for deflections and pings and then somebody comes in and finish it. There's, I don't know, whether it's because of those rules where contact has kind of been frowned upon for a long time, that you don't have that kind of physical presence in a 6-yard box anymore. So what I'm saying is...
what are you saying?
Open goal on the line is the ideal Bamford.
You want somebody to goal hang, is what you used to. The sort of thing that kids would tell each other off for in the playground.
Well, that's it. I mean, Bamford has to work his socks off all over the pitch. And that was true of him today. And, you know, after his cameo against Peru, when he was setting goals up, it's good that he got this one. And maybe about time that he scored one, in terms of like he's been slacking off not scoring. But when we're looking at our season so far in general, we haven't got a league win yet, but we've got our main number nine. He's got a goal and a contract and England call up. So maybe that will spark him into more. And what else is coming? Because form seems to be the interesting thing, because you can't really account for form is a mystery, isn't it? Everybody must stand alone when it comes to form. And this feels like the first time since that period when we got done 4-1 by Leicester City and Crystal Palace City at the start of last season. We've not really had a spell of bad form in the Premier League. This could be it. Mm-hmm. And so if there's those signs, well, we get a point at Burnley anyway. Bamford gets a goal. We didn't play great. Ayling looks a bit off it. Harrison didn't have a good day. Rodrigo looks anonymous. But Shackleton looks good. Tyler Roberts comes on and looks good. And then you've got COVID as the general excuse and the lack of transfers as a fear. It all kind of melds together into a feeling where we're probably not going to get relegated because it'll sort itself out and we'll be fine.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I thought we were denied space in all the areas that we tend to play in today. I was just thinking about it, talking about the effectiveness of Rafinha and Jackie, and neither of them really massively got into the game until very late on when Rafinha was involved in the goal. And obviously Shackleton came in and zhuzhed things up on that right-hand side, but they seem to deny us a lot of space. I notice, you know, normally we do that thing where the fullback will go and then give it to somebody inside, he'll pass it back, where we're playing those little triangles down the touchline. We didn't see any of that today, and Burnley denied us space there on the fringes of the pitch. So
Towards the end.
When they started to tire and this game got stretched.
Yeah, we found the energy
Maybe we should have gone behind earlier, so the game opened up a little bit for us.
Or maybe it's that inverse Joe Cole effect where he thinks that we collapse exhausted with 20 minutes to go, whereas in fact that's when our training and strength and conditioning comes into its own.
Have you seen Sean Dyche's comments?
No.
I mean, they're on Slack. If Sean is in the room, then Sean can read what he's already said. And
I'm not in the mood for Dyche. I feel depressed, but let's see. Let's give it a go anyway.
Whoever is in the mood for Dyche.
Give the people what they want. So Dyche, to be fair to him, he seems quite happy with a point against Leeds. So should we hear from him?
My laptop was working, you know.
Why does that mean? They're only Dyche's thoughts. What's that got to do with your laptop?
Are you trying to play the audio out? Is that the problem?
I'll just press play it now.
A tricky side to play against. There wasn't much in front of our goal. Nice, good, stuffy goal. That doesn't make sense. Don't get me wrong. We'll take one of them over the season.
Thanks, Sean.
A stuffy goal.
Yeah. Isn't it like a nose normally stuffy? We have a stuffy nose.
Throat there. Sounds like.
Francis, but he's got some stuffy goals.
If anybody has an issue with Qatar, the mucus you style, not the country.
You shouldn't have explained that because it already worked. Do you know what it feels like today? And that sigh, I think, is the embodiment of it. I've been left feeling a bit aggy, just a little bit annoyed. My back's up. I'm a little bit irritated by what's happened there because we're better than that. I don't know. I didn't like it from the start. We shouldn't have been in blue today either. We should have been in all white.
I didn't like the team to begin with, I have to say. I don't like the change. I didn't like the children on the bench.
The COVID,
that's bad. Did Click already have COVID over summer, or did he not have it in the end? When he was with Poland, he had
a positive test and then a negative test, didn't he?
Yeah, and then, yes. So he had all kinds of faffing about there. But, I mean, he put the picture of his test on Instagram, I think it was. It's a funny one because You alluded to transfers before, I think, unless it was on one of our false starts that I'm not supposed to refer to. Mm-hmm. But
that didn't happen.
The fears of us not having done enough in the transfer market is kind of, I don't necessarily feel that way. I think we're fine. I think because, and for the following reasons, we've strengthened in midfield by signing Junior Firpo, which means Stuart Dallas can be a full-time midfielder. Mm-hmm. So we don't necessarily need another midfielder or Lewis O'Brien or whoever comes up as a name, because we've actually added something there that at the start of last season we didn't have. So, of course, what goes and bloody happens, positive COVID tests for both Matches Click and Junior Firpo. So those are the two players, midfield and left back, out at one fell swoop. And I do wonder, like, the flip side to my comfort with where we are transfer-wise and Bielsa's obvious insistence that he'll only have the right player and he's fine with it, is if you maybe say, Marcelo, we are still in a pandemic and they're all getting ill. So maybe just one or two more to cover. And if it was a normal season, you could maybe say, you know, it's fine. There won't be the injuries. Stuart Dallas can cover, but here's the evidence that kind of maybe there's more going on. And so maybe more spare players might be beneficial. But then we also, we know what's going to happen. What did we have today when we're down to sort of bare bones, which is two substitutions, Tyler Roberts and Jamie Shackleton. The only surprise is that Helder Costa didn't come on at some point. So there's that great consistency remains the same. But then also, what are the odds that it would be Firpo and Click? So the two positions that we're most worried about, because we only have one left back, and then we don't have enough in midfield.
The Calvin Phillips position is quite a worry.
And then he had to move today to take over from Click. So then Stroik, we played as the back three. So it was all kind of moving around. He wasn't in his usual. When we go three at the back, we haven't got Phillips in that dropping in between the defenders thing. So what are, what are the chances of that happening? And maybe they'll be fine after this and they'll play the rest of the season and Stuart Dallas can just, you know, sit on the bench.
Got a couple of days left of the transfer window, Michael. Should we?
I think we should make some panic buys.
You think? Who would you panic buy?
John Scales and Thomas Skaravi.
Okay. What about Dan James if he becomes available? I mean, he's playing for Man United as we speak in the game against Wolves.
Let's not buy Dan James.
But he'd be dead. Look, he'd be dead quick and run down the line fast.
Run it down the line and out of play. He was very obviously Man United's worst player when we played them.
Does he not just need some coaching?
Maybe,
by a man who likes him.
All their other players were dead good.
Yeah.
So why was he not as good? I don't know. I also don't think like a winger is, I don't think it should be our top priority. I think the centre of midfield is where there is a bigger gap, because potentially with complete blind faith, I actually think, like, I would quite like to see Somerville play, or not Costa. Just Somerville probably, but I don't know. It feels like it's a position where you can carry people in the team a little bit more, whereas when you've got someone who is in and out of a game in central midfield or just out of the game as Rodrigo was today, it just feels like you're left completely wide open.
That said, Lewis Bates has looked all right for the under-23s so far.
But he doesn't play them. Doesn't play them, does he?
Well, it's a long season, and your mate Angus Kinnear, who's sitting in this chair, said that it's a 2-year process for a lot of the under-23s players, but Bates coming in, we think he can make an impact in the first team this season. So a lot of the players that were like Greenwood, Gelhart, even Somerville, who we signed at the start of last season, they are now on the bench, and I think they must be in. Well, we know that Bielsa's preference is, I have this many players, first team squad, and then it's players from the under-23s who I then turn to when they're not available and they can force them their way in. So this is the season and we are only 3 games in.
Mm-hmm.
So it would maybe be a bit much to have seen us playing a team that had Somerville, Greenwood, Gelhart, Bate, Dremmer. I can never get out of the...
All right, Neil.
I can never get out of the Colin habit of calling in Dremmer. All in at once. Charlie Creswell on the bench again as well today. You're not going to see them all in after 3 games, but how many games are in the Premier League season? Like
38.
Right, that's plenty. So maybe we see them starting to come. And if that gap does appear around November time in the season, with finally injuries COVID, just general upset, has emptied our midfield of options. Lewis Bates can stand alone, having spent some time learning what he's supposed to do at Leeds. So there is stuff there, and it's still...
Just, it feels flimsy, Mark. Well, it feels flimsy.
But the problem now is that if we sign somebody in the next 2 days, they'll be dismissed as a panic signing because it's a response to where the season has begun so far.
I don't care.
And if it's Dan James, it'll be even worse because he doesn't solve any of the problems that we have. So it might in the long term...
Sign him and put him in midfield.
Yeah, it might in the long term be that, you know, the perfect player is there, but this is less about... I feel like it's maybe less about finding the right player for the squad at this point, more about calming everybody down. And I don't think there is an option now at this stage in the transfer window to calm everybody down, because if we don't sign somebody, a lot of people are going to panic. If we sign somebody, people will say that's a panic signing. And if we sign the wrong player, everybody will be upset. So it's very difficult to kind of go into the last 3 days. And Bielsa, I think he said this evening that he doesn't think anybody's going to be coming in. He thinks not, Adam Pope says, when asked if there will be any incomings by the end of the transfer window. So it seems like it's almost a redundant discussion anyway, because Bielsa ain't having it.
Our last two results are not in isolation bad. Like, Everton are a good side. We played pretty well, got a point. Burnley is the traditional tough place to go. Their style clashes quite badly with ours, I would suggest, for creating an open game. I know we did them last season.
But it's like mixing it. Milk and orange juice, isn't it?
If you remember the home game last season, though, we did win, but we were pretty lucky to do so. They had actually had the better chances that day. It's just that it's the start of the season and there are no wins on the board for us yet. If this was a game that was happening in March and we were 11th and we'd just drawn, we'd all be going, it was a crap game, never mind, we move on.
Liverpool next.
It just feels like, because we've not yet won a game in the league this season, it feels like a very mini sort of crisis.
We'll beat Liverpool. We'll do something stupid like beat Liverpool.
Same as we did last season. That's the thing, isn't it? We had the easy start last year, didn't we? When it was, where are our results from the start of last season? So Liverpool away, win. Fulham home, Sheffield United. So we won both of those and they both ended up being relegated. And then a draw with Manchester City, which was unexpected. And then what today felt like actually was that 1-0 defeat at home to Wolves that we had last October, which was game 1, 2, 3, 5.
Ah, fair enough.
It felt like that, didn't it? And Wolves, mid-table, shouldn't be as good as good as us because they're Wolves and we're Leeds and they're Burnley and we're Leeds. And then actually, we went straight from that to, right, we had the big Bamford show, hat-trick against Villa, but then Leicester 4-1, Palace 4-1, Arsenal 0-0. We had that back to being good away to Everton. Then we lost 3-1 to Chelsea, 1-2 to West Ham. So
it never really settled down until sort of October, November, did it?
Yeah, I think we have... I'm looking at it on Wikipedia's page of results from last season, and it's only after March where you see a lot of green and yellow up until that point, and that means green is wins,
a win, yeah.
Yellow's a draw. Up until that point, it is just two red, one green, two red, one green,
yeah.
Couple of green, couple of red. So I think there's maybe a bit of rose-tinted perception of last season because of how it ended so strongly and so brilliantly. We were smacking Burnley around 4-0 and beating Spurs 3-1. But this doesn't feel dissimilar to some of what was happening at the start of last season. Just it would be nice to have a 4-3 over Fulham and a 1-0 over Sheffield United. Although even that, we had to wait for the 88th minute for Bamford to score to get that winner against Sheffield United. And remember, they were fucking terrible.
Although
we
didn't know that at that point, did we?
They were still, I mean, they were chronic from the start. Come on. I won't have any rose-tinted recollection of Sheffield United season last season. It was amongst the worst that I've seen. Heckingbottom improved them in the end, did he?
I think what I will say is we just need to get a win, don't we? Once we've got that first win, we can all breathe and say, it's going to be fine again. It's just if we continue to go on without winning, and there's a chance we will lose against Liverpool, but everyone just needs to keep it together, don't they?
That's on the plus thing. Side, I would normally say that this international break this early in the season is really annoying, but actually it means Firpo and Click should be back for that game as well, which will help things, as long as they're not still struggling with COVID, which, you know, I think we do slightly dismiss it with football as well. It's like, it's just a it's just almost like they need to get for the paperwork, they've got to have some time out, but you know, you don't know how badly affected they actually are by it. But yeah, there is at least a chance they will both be playing in that game.
Well, let's settle in for the grind then. And actually, I'm looking forward to the transfer window being shut, just so we know what we're dealing with and what we're facing. So we'll reconvene on Tuesday. We'll do propaganda and hear from that Burnley maniac with the teardrops.
He's a nice fella.
I don't know
if he's actually he might be inside. I'm not sure. I don't know if he's still doing
inside the stadium.
Essentially. Yeah.
And we'll have a chat on the main show as well. So join us for that. Thanks for listening to this. We'll see you in a bit.
The Match Ball.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.